But when I went on the show, if you watch the show, it's not exactly what I thought. It ended up being the whole cast against me.
Hello, all, and welcome to Marsha, 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 the podcast. I'm your host, Marsha Molinari, and you are here listening to the podcast that brings true and heartfelt human connection. I believe if you don't know about it, you can't care about it. And that's why we're here today. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. Thank you for joining us again. And I'm here with a very special guest, someone that I've known a very long time. Her name is Samaya Reese. She's best known for her part on Love & Hip Hop, the first season. But you're coming back, right, girl?
Yeah. So we're currently airing right now our Where Are They Now special.
Right.
For Love & Hip Hop New York.
So and that aired this Monday?
This Monday and every Monday for the next 4 weeks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I've also known her as when we first met, you were doing all your music, mm-hmm. rapping. When did we meet? Because that was before Love & Hip Hop.
MySpace.
Girl.
MySpace. Let's.
We're going to edit that part out. MySpace. Of course.
A long time ago.
No. I'm so happy and proud that I've known you for that long. Yeah. But you've been through a lot since. You know, you've mm-hmm. brought yourself out of the ashes like a phoenix rising. Mm-hmm. You have your slim tees.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Fit My Body, mm-hmm. right?
This fits me.
This fits mm-hmm. me. I'm always thinking of my body.
That's okay.
Yeah. This fits me. You know, and I was thinking about that on the way over here because yeah. I do actually often say to my friends, I'm like, can we get this in my size? You know,
yeah,
like,
right. You know, something that fits me.
Yeah, because the general idea is like one body type or one like, and there it's not that. We're all in shapes and sizes.
That's exactly why I called my brand This Fits Me, because it is for everyone. It's inclusive for everyone. And there is no one size fits all. Like that entire rhetoric and theory needs to just go away.
Go away.
Like you're not welcome here. So I called my brand This Fits Me because I felt that there are many times in my life where I was different sizes.
Yeah.
And this is normal. Me too. And I want to normalize that it's okay. And whatever fits you. So if you're in a space where you're like, yeah, this style, this fits me.
Yeah.
That's what it's about, to empower yourself. And this fits you, like you said.
Oh, so, I love that. Yeah. Honestly.
So there's a deeper meaning behind it.
Well, I really want to take people back to where we were in that time, you know, MySpace before mm-hmm. Love & Hip Hop. Mm-hmm. And it was really the beginning of my nightlife hospitality
yes.
World and my journey.
Yes.
And what, you know, kind of where we've been since and where we see ourselves going after.
Right.
Yeah. And so.
It blossomed.
Yeah.
Yes.
It really did. Where were you in that time? I know you. You had just started, like, or you've been working on your music, actually.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And do you remember, like, what your headspace was like then?
So, prior to MySpace, I was discovered by a William Morris talent agent. And I dove into acting and I, you know, was studying theater at UCLA. I also went to Aaron Spizer's master class.
I remember Aaron.
Yes. Yeah, Aaron. And so I was booking and booking and booking, but my headspace was I want to do music and I want to be an actress. This yeah. was like my aspirations. And so Tom, everyone's friend, you
yeah.
know, Tom invited me to MySpace and I didn't know what a social media was, what a MySpace was.
Yeah.
So Tom is truly a really big part of the discovery of Samaya Reese's music.
Yeah.
So I opened up. You know, I wasn't in a headspace yet because I didn't. It was new.
It was all
I
new.
Was literally
jumping in,
freshly out of South Central. I'm born and raised in L.A.
Right.
I'm a true Angelina, and I was yeah. I didn't have a car. I was on the bus. I was on the grind, but I was determined to make something of myself. I was determined to not be a statistic of my neighborhood. You know, I grew up in the roughest part of South Central and in different parts of it. So I was more on go mode.
Yeah.
But as.
And survival mode, right?
Full survival.
That's probably constant.
Yes. Yeah. It was full. I mean, I was born into survival mode.
Right.
And I remained there for a many long time until recently. where at the time I didn't know that. I didn't identify that. I didn't know anything about
it. Because that was just the world.
Right.
That was your world that you were living in. Right. That was the world.
The world. Right. And so I was just, you know, like on the grind. I opened up my MySpace page and then I became the number one most friended and streamed music artist, but I was independent. I didn't know anything about record labels, nothing. And then
what that meant.
No. And then MySpace Records brought me in for a record label meeting and I didn't have a team. So I turned down many record labels, multi-million dollar deals. And it was probably the best thing I did because I was not prepared.
Right.
You know, there's certain things. The universe and God's timing is always right.
Yeah.
You don't have to be religious to say that.
No.
God's timing in the universe and however it is that you view your spirituality is your time when it's supposed to be. So that was not my time.
No,
I had no
idea.
And that put me in a different headspace.
But I love that you say that because my mom, she tells these stories of what could have happened. And it breaks my heart because she was like, I could have done this or I, and in my head, I'm like, but if you had did those things, I wouldn't have been born, girl.
Right.
But
no,
you know, whatever along your way, these certain things don't happen for a reason. And there are teachers.
Yes.
You know, these moments become our teachers. And if we're not ready for that, you know, I wanted lots of things then too. And I'm so thankful that I didn't get them because not having met certain people in my life today is not worth that ripple effect. And I've said that before here. Mm-hmm. And, but I kind of do want to go back to, you know, growing up in South Central and being, I want to touch base a little bit about being part of a gang because I know in Central California where I'm from, there was lots of gangs and I've had cousins that have been in gangs and the mentality around that because, you know, when you don't really have a sense of family, that instantly...
That is your family.
That is your family.
Yes.
And when someone finally shows you love, because I really want people to understand why you stay in it and why sometimes you get locked in and you'll do things for people that show you, finally show you love.
Love, correct.
And you'll do wild things, you know, like, you know, it's ride or die. Like, this person will die for me.
Yeah,
I'm going to do the same.
I'm going to do the same.
And a lot of young youth get caught up in that because they're not shown that at home.
Right.
Any type of love. So if they're shown love in the wrong way.
In the wrong places.
They snatch onto it and they hold on for
dear
life.
They don't know any better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up in a very interesting home. So my father was, my dad is my daddy. I'm a daddy's little girl. I ain't got no daddy issues in the respect of like, he always overly till this day shows me love. Every day I can open up my phone. The first thing he does is good morning, preciosa, my queen, my beautiful baby.
That just gave me chills.
Yeah. Every day. So growing up, I was very fortunate that I had a father that was like that and a brother that taught me how to be tough and don't let people walk all over you and things like that. And on the flip side, unfortunately, my father was suffering alcohol demons.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my mother and father would fight, my dad was overly loving and my mother was not. She would show her love in other ways. She'd cook for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that her ways of showing you love was different.
Right.
And as a child, you know, you want your mother's love too.
Totally.
And so I ran away when I was turning 10 years old because there was too much going on in the house. And I never returned. 10 years old, and I never returned. I've been on my own since I was 10.
Oh my God, I can't imagine.
I can't imagine either, because I look at my nieces and my nephews, and I'm like, I can't even believe I was a little girl holding my own.
But you must have already had a built-in, like, survival.
Yeah, like, I knew.
All of that's in there. Because
all of it.
I've said before, like, I don't know how, when I was little, like, I knew instantly, like, if I wanted something, and I have to, like, work for it. So I was like selling stuff at like 5 years old.
Yeah, me too.
On the playground. I was selling candy bars.
I would do Hallmark cards.
Yeah. I was like, well, I got to do this on my own.
Yeah, so chicles.
And, you know, actually, I ran away when I was 12.
Oh, wow.
Luckily, it didn't work out that day.
Okay.
Girl, but I did all the movements. I jumped the fence. We crawled on the ground. I had to re-jump the fence, get back into bed.
It's very common, though,
right,
for kids.
But yeah. I mean, because it wasn't an ideal situation for myself, but like 10 is...
Yeah, so it was
So where'd you go?
So I stayed in trap houses. You know, I stayed in trap houses. My brother was very involved with the streets, so I never had a problem with anyone kind of bothering me. But I did suffer a lot of pain in other ways, a lot of trauma. And
well, one, not just, a real life, a real it, sense of sensibility.
No, I had
or stability.
No stability. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know where I was going to eat or where I was going to sleep at night. And, but what I did know is that leaving my home was better for me mentally mm-hmm. at the time. And I didn't realize that. I just knew I had to go.
Right.
Cause I no one was hearing what I had to say. And I, you know, I hearing the constant fighting and it was just traumatizing me. Yeah. And I was like, I got to go. And I got my first job at a swap meet when I was 12. But prior to that, I was like just selling stuff like, you know, like all kids in the hood. And it was helping me survive to have enough food. Trap houses are free. So it's not like I had to pay rent.
Right.
And I got my own apartment when I was 12. And a lot of different things happened.
Can I just ask, what exactly is a trap house? I'm like, was you know, she Fetty, just involved? Fetty, there was music all day long. She was like,
well, you know, I'm can a hip-hop.
I
get a
break? I used to go at night only because the music stopped then.
Like, all right. Well, you know Fetty Wap song, yeah, Trap Queen? Right. Okay.
That was me.
So a trap house is where, you know, the boys go live and they sell drugs out of.
Okay.
So it's a trap house. It depends. There's levels to the trap house. There's, you know, a trap house where the bosses are at and then the workers just come and do what they do and they leave. And then there's trap houses that are slash crack houses.
Right.
Because
there was just a sense of danger, real danger
all the time,
all around you.
All the time. Just, I mean, they did drive-bys, like it was real. And but I had to do what I had to do. And I almost felt that it was the danger was worth it for me than to see my mother and father fighting and then my mother's, you know, doesn't really show love in that way. So it was kind of hard to talk to her about certain things.
So you're like, and at I'm the gonna same go get time, what I need on my own.
On my own, right. And so that's exactly what I did. You know, I got my first job. I got a little apartment in the hood. I mean, no one's going to ask you for ID, you know? And I've always looked older than I was because I was developed and I was tall.
Right.
And that's not very common for like Latin neighborhoods.
Yeah.
You know, I was really tall. So I would always say like, oh, I'm 19, you know, and they're not going to ask.
Yeah, like, okay,
so I got like this really tiny little apartment. It was like literally the size of a bathroom, you know, but it was enough to lay my head, go to work, you know, and, but I had aspirations, you know, I had things I wanted
to do. You knew it was going to be different.
I knew that I could get myself out of it. But along the way, a lot of really bad things happened to me. You know, one particular thing is that, you know, with the gangs, I was walking with my friend, walking home, and this gang member from the same neighborhood but a different area was really high, and he kidnapped me and my friend, and he held us in a basement for almost a week.
No.
Yeah, and it was really traumatizing, and I'm very fortunate that I was not sexually assaulted, but every day this man would tell me that he was going to rape me. And I fought.
I mean, that even having the physical trauma.
No, just hearing it.
The mental trauma is like,
it was.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. You know, it used to bother me, but like, it is still an emotional thing for me, but I'm finally now able to talk about it, you know? And I, you know, one of the days that he was out getting his crack, I untied myself and I went to go get my friend because she was upstairs and I was downstairs. And at night when he was gone, we would talk between the vents and we were just trying to figure out like, how are we going to get out? So I just grabbed her because she wasn't really a fighter. She's a very just sweet girl, you know, and I was more like, come on, we got to go. And we just, you know, ran. But, you know, he shot us. He stabbed us. It was
by when you tried to escape.
No, before that. So we were almost bleeding out, dying.
No.
Yeah, the story could be very different.
Yeah.
So we ran and ran and kept running. And, you know,
this is like, well, you know, I'll tell you, same. When I was 12, again, a lot of things happened when I was 12. But I was in my friend's front yard and someone tried to scoop me and put me in their car.
It's very real.
And I'm so thankful because I do remember, you know, I had this in my head. So when I looked up at the guy, he was so big, he just scooped me. Like, oh my God. I was like a feather. Little. And then when he dropped me, because I was kicking, I pounded on my friend's door. My friend didn't even ask or didn't even know what was going on. He grabs me and they're both pulling on me.
Oh my gosh.
And he almost got me to the car the second time. And luckily the neighbor came out. But I thought about that day so many times, you know, but also that lives on your body. And like what you went through is like what the nightmare would be if, you know, possibly if I had gone.
It's still a nightmare, even if that didn't happen.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's very common in in urban neighborhoods, you know.
My niece has told me that she's been followed.
Yeah.
Before. Inside
it's
of stores.
It's happened to me now. Like, as an adult. And it's really creepy and it's very sad because my story could have been different.
Definitely.
You know,
meant to be here.
Right. I know now that a lot of those things that happened to me, see, I wasn't like a bad kid. Right. I was a good girl running with the wrong crowd because I was trying to escape.
Right. Each time. Like,
it's like if you're on levels. I escape one, I'm like, you know, heading to the big boss to fight him and then fighting someone else. It was just an entire forever survival mode.
Right.
And it was never deactivated.
Right. No one stops the game or pause.
Right.
Or
the game doesn't stop or pauses at all.
Definitely.
At all. So, I would have to say that the things that I did learn from a lot of these situations that happened to me is that I totally believe that I was put on this earth to endure these traumas, survive them, and have a story to tell so that I can inspire others.
100%.
I am a vessel and I know it. And it took me a long time to accept that. Because
to know that you were meant to be here. Yes. Instead of like, why is it all coming at me?
Why? Yeah. Like, why is this happening to me?
Yeah.
Not
in a sense where you get to that place where for you.
Correct.
Because you're the one that could handle it.
Correct.
You know, because
I know that I have two sisters. And I know one of them, she can't even.
Yeah.
It's for me, it wasn't, I don't, you know, I look back and I think about a lot of situations aside from that happened to me. And I'm like, how the F did I survive that?
Right.
But I had the will. I was like, no.
It's not going
if
down
it's,
like
no,
this.
It's not. If it comes down to two people eating, you're not going to eat me.
Right.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've always been that way. I've carried that throughout these years. I stand up for myself. I am not a doormat.
Right.
I am no one's option. I am not going to be a mean girl.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to allow it to turn me into I'm a savage in a different way.
Right.
When you know what
you're
I mean?
Coming at me, it's different. Yeah. But then you've got an open heart.
Right.
As well.
I'm full of love and I just want to show other people like, it's okay. You can heal from it.
Right.
Absolutely not. We should not have gone through trauma.
No. You don't want it for other people or yourself. But what you're saying is that you went through it and survived it.
Healed.
But
it's constant healing.
Every day.
Every day.
So when do you get out of this? How far along? To where this happened, do you stay because of circumstance then after until you're able to get out? And when are you able to get out?
So when you live in a certain area, you don't know what's outside of there, you're not getting out.
And it's not, you don't even think it's for you.
No. Like I didn't really know that there was anything else outside of that.
Right.
And sadly, when I was like, okay, I'm going to maybe try to go to school, but I wasn't going home. I obviously needed parents' permission.
Mm-hmm.
And my father all these years didn't know what happened, why I ran away. And, you know, when I got a hold of my father again, he was like, why did you leave? I've been looking for you. Like, please come home. But my mother didn't want me there. And so it was a battle of, you know, husband probably, you know, telling wife something. And then at the same time, my dad was like, well, you don't deserve to be in this toxic environment. So, he helped guide me, and I got, you know, he would come see me, and I was like, Daddy, I want to go back to school. Like, I don't know what I want to do. Yeah, I want to be an actress. I was playing the violin when I was in school. You know, I was in the choir, and I wanted to sing, and I want to do this, but I'm in this situation. Yeah. And my father has always been like, you can be anything you want to be. Literally, my dad is the biggest cheerleader. Anyone that meets him someday, you'll meet him too.
Yeah.
He just cheers for everyone. He is just the sweetest person. And so partial of my guidance was my father.
And that voice being like, you can do anything. Right. You can do anything.
And just a lot happened in between then. You know, at the time, I met a man. And I didn't know he was older than me. I was still a young girl, you know. Right. And he was preying on me. Later on, I found out he was like, I was 14 turning 15.
No.
And he was like 30 somethings. But he looked so young because he dressed the part and everything. And he convinced me that my father didn't love me. And
he groomed you to make you.
He did groom me. And then I became a teen mom. And, you know, I went through hell. He left me on the streets. I mean, then I'm back on the streets, pregnant. Like, what am I going to do? And just there's so many things that happened that we could literally be here for days. My son was murdered.
Your son was
and
murdered.
And that changed my life. That
How
was
could a, it not?
That was probably the biggest thing that just, like, it's not that I was doing anything bad. You know what I mean? It was not my fault. Right. I didn't, you know, this man, he was telling me, you know, like, oh, your parents don't love you. Like, I'm going to love you. And you don't know that as a little girl. I was a little girl.
Yeah.
You know?
You believe.
So.
That's where the grooming comes in and
right. It's
mentality.
Just the manipulation.
Yeah.
The manipulation. So.
You were stuck in it.
You know, I went through a lot of pain because of that. And, you know, my son died in my arms, and it's something that I've never been able to truly grasp, partially understand, because it's something that you don't really truly understand.
I mean, how?
You know? But, you know, it just felt like after one thing, there was the other, you know, and then I'm trying to get my life together, and my daddy helps me enroll in high school.
Well, I just want to stop and say this is just a testament to you and your spirit being so strong, because to survive one of those things is heroic.
Yeah.
And you are a hero, and you have to know that, because one of those little things, most people won't never go through any kind of struggle or pain or have to overcome any of these things. You know, most people are like, there's young kids out there who just don't want to go to school, and that's their big thing.
I'm a nap.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Totally.
It's okay.
No,
thank you.
Go ahead. But I just want you to
thank
know,
you. And
like,
it took me so long.
No, of course. I mean, this is what we're here, you know. And I always say this every episode is that if you don't know about it, it's hard to care about it. And so the importance of sharing your story for other people, for that young girl that's out there and not knowing what she's going to do with her life because her parents have turned her away, or, you know, she doesn't feel like there's another way out.
Right.
You know, the message is here. It gets better.
It always gets better. And
if you allow it.
Yes, you have to allow it. You have to open your heart to know that there is something better out there. I wouldn't say better, but there is a path that's for you that doesn't have to be so traumatic.
Right.
And, just as like a big piece of, you know, that whole situation, I was like, I got rid of that guy. Like, I was like, dude, I do not want to ever talk to you again. Do not come around here. My father, you know, threatened him. Like, and then
when
I started
to. That must have taken a lot, because, you know, once you're kind of in that mindset, and people can manipulate you in a certain way and let you believe, you know, my own father used to tell my mom, you'll never find anyone. You'll never find love. And like you, it's like nothing like you. What are you talking about? You're not that great. But then you just still believe it.
Yeah.
You know, it's you're young and your mind is.
You're not developed.
No.
You're not developed. Yeah, you're not developed. But the best thing I did was I was like, bye. But he wouldn't let me go. And, you know, fortunately, he came back and he beat me. And he said that if he can't have me, no one else will. And I don't remember anything past that and his laughing. And I woke up and I was being resuscitated. He left me in a pool of my own blood. He meant to kill me.
And here you still are.
And he meant that, but he didn't.
He didn't.
He didn't.
She hard to kill.
No, listen. I'm like Michael Myers. Right? Like, you know what I'm
saying? You thought you got me, but you didn't. It's not the end.
No, I'm coming back.
Right.
But I look at it in so differently now. But like at the time, I didn't ask for that. You know what I mean? I left this guy. He wouldn't let me go. And it's like, it was just.
Again, one thing after the
other. Yeah, it was just like, can I get a break?
Yeah. Can I get breathe? A fucking break, honestly?
I was never allowed to breathe.
Wow.
I just was not allowed to breathe.
And so is that kind of where you turn into music? Like, because I know like music can be so therapeutic and very, releasing all the things you want to say, all the things you've been through, and no one has your story. And
everyone. Everyone.
Were you writing at this time? Like writing your...
So I was writing a lot of poems.
Yeah.
I was writing a lot of poems. When I was in school, I was in the highly gifted program and playing violin. And I always wanted to make music. But, you know, just coming fresh out of all of these things, I don't know any producers.
Right.
And I can't trust any men.
Right.
You know?
Already that's established.
That was So I cleaned houses with my mom when we were, you know, kids, and I got a job cleaning hotels. I actually used to work at the Beverly Hills Hotel cleaning rooms.
No way.
Yeah, and also at the Holiday Inn Select Beverly Hills.
Okay.
And the Prescott.
Right.
So I used to clean rooms. I used to take the bus, and I would work two shifts. I would work the 6 a.m. to 3, and then the next hotel I would work from 5 to 11 or 12. I forgot, or 6 to 12. I forgot. And that was my routine. And then when school would start, I was going to school. And I was actually writing poems. You know, I didn't really know what I was doing. I wanted to be an actress. But every day, you know, people would be like, you're a maid here? You should be an actress. You're so pretty. Why are you here?
I don't know.
I'm like, I don't know. Figure that like, out you myself. Help me. Right. Like, you know somebody?
Right.
So, interestingly enough, I was actually discovered because I was cleaning rooms. This little old couple, you know, were like, oh, you know, call my son. You know, he's an agent and you shouldn't be here. You speak English. You're beautiful. You're tall. And they're old people. Right. So I'm like, okay, they definitely got nothing against me. Right. Like, you know, so I kind of, basically that's really where it started. I went in for an audition and I didn't even know it was an audition and got sent out as, you know, like every casting call. And I just started booking and then just my life changed.
Wow.
Just everything changed. And then I told my agent, like, I really want to sing and rap. And he was like, let me see what I can do. And then I got on MySpace. And then Tom opened up the door and helped me find producers and different things. And just it was just my life changed.
And how long after did Love and Hip Hop come then?
So Love and Hip Hop was... So remember when all the like love shows were happening?
Yeah.
For the love of?
Yeah.
So I was offered...
All of them, girl.
Yes, right. I was offered all of them because I was the only Latina, you know, Afro, you know, Latina on MySpace. Like, there was no one like me on there.
Right.
And so I was, you know, they'd call my agent or they'd DM me. And
no, because in that time it was very one thing.
It was one thing.
It was one thing only.
It was one thing. Every time I would tell people, like, you know, I'm Salvadorian, but I'm Afro-Latina. They were like, what? What's that? Yeah. But I was booking the roles of that.
Right.
And so in Hollywood, they understood, but people as a whole didn't understand that.
Right. Or where to, I'm sure it wasn't as easy as booking. I'm sure you had to do a lot.
It was just like, you know, but I am a hard worker and I'm willing to put in the work. So I was like, this is my ticket. I'm like, I don't know how this is going to work out for me, but I love this. I love that I can be an artist in this.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, my teacher, I'm sorry, before I went to acting school, you know, my agent was like, you know, everyone, all the casting directors are saying you're a natural. He's like, but if you want to be great and you want to really do this for the long haul, you need to go to acting school. So I was like, okay, cool.
Where the school at?
Let's go. Where the school at? I'm in there. Yeah. Don't tell me twice.
Right.
And so I pretty much, you know, was using the money for my bookings. Plus, I was still working part-time cleaning rooms. And I started to also do vocal lessons as well. And I went to a musical school as well. And Aaron Spizer kind of put me on to all these other people. And at the time, J-Lo wasn't like fully J-Lo yet.
And she was with him too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
He always would tell me, like, you remind me of my client. You just will not stop. And you're going to get there. Yeah. He always told me there was something special about me. I mean, he still will. And was just a big supporter of mine. He almost reminded me of my father. He was like, wow. You got this, girl. Like, use that street shit you learned. Mm-hmm. Like, he's very real like that. You know, he's like, use that for your roles. Go out for those roles. Go out for the Chola role, whatever. Like, you know, you can embody it, right? So I, you know, me and the headspace I was at was more so I'm in go mode.
Right.
I didn't even know.
Doesn't stop.
It was just like, again, I still couldn't breathe.
Right.
But I was just
because
going.
Because it's nonstop.
But it was more positive.
Right.
Then I got my own little apartment in Hollywood, and it was, you know, a nice quiet street, and I was...
What street in Hollywood was quiet?
Well, you know, like, okay, you know, like in Franklin,
orange
I know.
Orange in between this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You already know. Right. Like when Franklin was quiet.
Right.
Like,
Franklin was quiet at one point. That was a secret street.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I lived there. So I got a little place, and I mean, the first night sleeping there was like no noise. And I was like,
oh, what a change for you.
I just felt like, oh no, this is the life I want to live.
Yeah.
At peace. I wasn't chasing fame. I wasn't chasing anything. I was just like, I just got to get out of the hood.
Right.
I just have to get out of this.
Yeah. I'm going to stay no matter what. There was no choice to go back.
No.
I mean, it was that for me when I first moved here too. And what I tell like younger people moving here, and they say, you know, they give it, I'm going to give it 6 months. I'm going to give it 2 years. I'm all,
oh, no.
Oh, wait, what? You're going to give it? What? No, there was no going back. There was no time limit for me here. The time that I needed and the rush was I need to stay and do anything to stay here. Mm-hmm. I mean, my first apartment was up on Sycamore in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. So,
And I shared, someone had a one bedroom. Mm-hmm. They had the one bedroom and they put up cubicle walls.
Yes.
And so there was
you shared it with some friends. Some,
not even friends, girl. It was somebody else. We had a hot plate. The oven was off.
Yeah. That's and, that but
I loved it then because I was like, this is better than my situation back home. So I'll do this. This is easy for me.
Yes.
There's no one coming at me. This is great for me. Yes. So I understand that. Yes. Like, and finally have that space of your own.
Right. And then coming from such a turbulent place, I was like, this is great. Like, I am happy. You know, I've only had like one roommate like my whole life. Cause once I was able to like have my own place, I was like, oh no, I need to be by myself, you know? But you know, this person actually is still a friend of mine now. And he became this huge architect in, Palm Springs.
Oh, wow.
He's great. Really nice guy. And, I was just very happy just to be out of there. And I just kept pushing. I kept pursuing it. I just kept, you know, I'd show up on time, be professional, studied my craft. And, you know, I on MySpace, I was asked by the producers to, you know, if I was in New York or going to be in New York, that there was some kind of casting going on for something. And I didn't think anything of it. And at the time, The Game, the rapper, his DJ, New Jersey Devil, he was like, you know, the kind of music you want to do. So I was like, I want to make this type of Spanish music. I had this vision of what I wanted it to be like. And he said, that type of music, they make it in the East Coast or in Miami or Puerto Rico. I was like, who do I know out there? I don't know. How am I going to get there?
Can we do it here too?
Exactly. Like... And he said, you know, just, you know, if you could just save up some money and just go out there and I'll put you with different friends of ours, you know? And I was like, okay. So I pretty much sold everything I had, went there with one suitcase,
girl,
a pocket full of lint, and said, what is the worst that could happen?
Right.
And while I was there, I met with some producers. I started working with the producer. And then my now show producer was like, hey, you know, would you like to come in and audition for the show? It's about hip hop. And I was like, okay, cool. So I went, and it wasn't really an audition. It was more just like of a conversation. Yeah, like, they're like, what are you doing here? You. Yes. They're like, well, you know, they knew my whole story from MySpace, obviously. And like the next day, they offered me the show. But when I went on the show, if you watch the show, it's not exactly what I thought. Mm. You know, I thought I was going on there. It was just going to show, you know, my grind. But it ended up being the whole cast against me.
Just drama.
Three girls. You're like, yeah, girl. Three girls against me.
Wait.
And I'm like,
wait. Well,
yeah, I'm just trying to make music, y'all. Right. I don't want to bother nobody. And so I, you know, being the person, the fighter that I am, I never backed down. And like, I was respectful. Right. No, I was respectful to everybody around me. Like, yo, I'm just trying to work. Like, I really don't want to bother nobody. Like, but you're not going to step on me.
Right.
Because that's the one thing I tell people all the time.
So now, was that more of a producer? Were they like trying to create this drama?
I mean, you know, we'll never know.
Right. Right. But someone was talking to somebody's ear.
I mean,
you know,
yeah, like they were definitely telling, you know, one of the girls on the cast that I was probably trying to be with her boyfriend. And how would any woman feel like that? Like, right, some girl coming. I get it. Right. And
now,
like, we can laugh about it now.
Right.
And me and her did laugh about it, actually. But at the time, it was nothing funny about it.
No.
For me, I was just like,
I'm trying to do this one thing.
Yeah.
No.
I'm like, I'm not bothering nobody, y'all. Right. Like, I'm just trying to make music. And so it was, you know, the story that I showed was the raw truth of what it's like to be an artist on the grind.
Right.
I didn't have a place to stay, so I was couch surfing. Then I stayed in an attic.
I remember that.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not ugly, so it's not like I couldn't find somebody, right, that would help me.
But you,
my path,
right,
and what I choose, that's not what I wanted.
Right.
I wanted to grind it out on my own, for my own, because one thing that I learned from, you know, some things that happened to me on the streets is that I will never let anybody have a hand over me,
mm-hmm,
in that respect.
Nothing's for free.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I was very like, no, I just, you know, I want to work with producers that just want to work.
Right.
Like, that's it. And anything extra.
Isn't that funny that that's what has to be said?
It has to be said, you know. But, you know, I actually am very fortunate that I've never had any issues in that way. And I don't know if it's because of how I present myself. I don't know if it's my aura.
They're like, not going to step.
Yeah, no, but I've actually, you know, producers, directors, everybody, I haven't had that issue.
Right.
You know, I might have had somebody flirt with me, but never anything crossing the line in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy about that because I ain't trying to knock nobody out. You know what I mean?
Girl, that to be honest.
As a woman, let me take my heel off real quick.
I was telling my mom this the other day. It happened to me a lot.
Uh-huh.
It was like constant that where I'm.
See, it can be the opposite.
Yeah,
see?
It was like, I'm gonna give you this if you do this, and I'm like, you don't know who you just messed with. And you know, at this very time, I worked for the head of sexual harassment for SAG, so I was like, you don't know who you just messed with. And I went to him, and he was like, you should do it. And then I walked out of his office, and I was like, this what it's about?
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that's the only guy to go to.
Yeah.
And that was the advice at the time that would never fly.
Right.
Anymore.
Right.
Thank God things have changed.
Yeah.
Because for me, it didn't seem like there could be anybody else to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was discouraging for a minute. But
yeah.
I didn't let that one casting director stop
me. Right.
You know?
And that's the thing is, like, I feel that you know, obviously those things exist, you know,
right,
but for me, it's like, I understand. So this industry is really interesting, and things that I've learned. So I believe that I've been able to apply my street knowledge, literally my street knowledge and everything I learned in the streets to what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I became successful because I had those street smarts and I have book smarts. You know, you can't really run a circle around me.
Right.
You know, I'm.
You're going to see it first.
Yeah,
before
see
you,
it first.
When you start putting your shoes on,
right,
you're going to notice.
And I'd actually rather somebody just keep it G. Like,
right,
like what you want. Like, you know, instead of being like.
So you can let them know.
Yeah. So I can make my decision instead of being a creep.
Right. Right. No,
you know what I mean? Or instead of being somebody that is not, because there's a lot of promises.
Right.
You know? Yes. People will promise you everything. So I've been very fortunate that I think a lot of the people that I've worked with have been very straight up, you know, and like I said, I've had some people flirt with me, whatever, and that's cool. It's like I'd rather know what's going on, because all that sneaky stuff, like I already know what that is. Like, you know, and I think people need to stand up for themselves more and also speak up. You know, don't be afraid of speaking up. What's the worst that could happen?
Right.
You know, you mentioned like, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. Like, it's cool. If it's not for you, it's not for you. And right. if you're not comfortable with something, just say it.
Right.
You know, but I know that some people, they're introverts, or they can't speak up for themselves. Well, it's hard.
Right. And we were talking a little bit about this right when you came in, and it was about, you know, especially during the pandemic, and about how rough it was and the loneliness. Yes. And then to deciding to what to share and not wanting to be someone that was whining, but someone, then how much do you keep in until then you're hurting yourself?
And then it becomes dangerous.
For you or for anyone, right. You know, to not always post that picture of you smiling, but maybe the month, the week, the year, the years have been tough.
Yes.
But that happens with everyone. So why are we so afraid of sharing those emotions when things are tough? And why does it have to seem like a burden,
right,
to share the bad things? I mean, what, like, the mentality behind that?
I think that, so everyone's story is different,
for
right?
Sure.
But I know that for myself, I've always been very transparent. But when COVID hit, like, it was different. It changed the world entirely.
Mm-hmm.
It changed my life it started very negative because, you know, I was at the epicenter. I lost my first friend from COVID. Then I lost my friend's mother, who I was close with. And it just
kept hitting.
It just,
like, again,
didn't stop. Yeah. I can't breathe again. Yeah. I went into a very deep, high-functioning depression where I would have to smile, you know? The high functioning part. And I have never dealt with such a deep depression. So I didn't even know what I was feeling.
Right. You didn't know how
to. And on occasion, I would share it. But what I have realized a little bit about a little bit, because it's very different for everyone. So in my home, you know, maybe it's a very traditional Latino thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, feelings, depression. Mm-hmm. No, don't talk about that. What is the family going to think? Like, therapy, right. What? Like, that is a very now thing.
Or even getting to a hospital, like a doctor.
Oh, a doctor?
No, we're going to heal you here. No.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to give you some vapor rub, some vaporu, and a ginger ale. You know what I'm saying?
And some crackers.
A little ginger tea and some crackers, exactly.
Sure.
But I think that a lot of it stems.
And that's a problem.
Oh, it's a big. Yeah. We're laughing, but it is a problem. And
exactly.
I think that a big part of some of these things on what we feel, see, in Latino families and a lot of families of culture, we are raised with guilt.
Mm-hmm. It's there.
So be grateful. And then when you kind of get a little success, you feel a little guilty for it almost.
Right.
When you start to have these sadness of feelings, you feel a little guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is because of generations
mm-hmm.
of teachings.
Right.
It is also something that when you're lonely and you're by yourself, I've always kind of been a loner too. Like, I don't really run in packs.
Right.
I feel actually more unsafe in packs
right.
than, you know, safe. Some people feel safe in packs. I don't. Right. And what I have learned is that when you are alone, you are at your true self.
Mm-hmm.
You are at the most vulnerable place. Can you live with yourself?
Right.
Do you know how? No, we're not taught these things.
Right.
I've been by myself for so long that when COVID hit, it still hit me because I thrive off of the energy of others.
Right.
I'm also an empath, so I also absorb energy of others.
Right.
But when this was happening, it was like, because no one was talking about it, but then when people just, like, you start sharing things, I knew, like, you made me feel seen and heard. You made me feel like, okay, I'm not the only one. you know, and then I reached out to you. I was like, hey, I hope your nephew's okay when you were dealing with that. I hope you're okay, you know. And then friends of mine, I had a friend of mine that recently shared how COVID, like, almost destroyed their entire relationship because both people got depressed, you know. And then I had another friend that said the same thing about their relationship.
Right.
And it was like, oh my God.
No
one's talking about it, but now I'm not alone.
Right.
Like, I feel seen and heard. And that's when I started to open up a little bit more, and I started to go into healing. My fiance is a spiritual healer as well. So she taught me that it was okay to feel like that because I felt guilty.
Right.
For feeling that way.
Right.
I also
felt guilty for feeling depressed, and that made you more depressed because you feel
guilty. It's like it never ended.
Oh, the weight.
Like, yeah, it's like I felt depressed because I was depressed, and then
you felt guilty for being depressed.
So I really say that, you know, like, my fiance really was my rock during a lot of that. And she was like, she's very different than me when it comes to stuff like that. She's very like, you know, like, just, you know, like, it's okay, you know, like,
feeling
your feelings, but go kick some ass. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and for me, I this was new for me because I haven't, like I said, I haven't had a chance to breathe, and I've been healing along the way, but it's like that
on everything your own, came to a stop. And when you're healing on your own,
it's like, you it can feels do lonely. It,
but then, yes.
Yeah, it feels lonely no matter what anyone says.
Yeah.
It feels like it's just you.
Right.
It is not happening to anyone.
Right. And you're like, and, how?
Right. And then I felt guilty for feeling that way. Because then I felt like, that's so self-centered of me to believe that. But it's all because of the trauma and the guilt and the feeling like
layers you're and not, layers.
It's just layers and layers. And so once we began to unpeel each one, little by little, you know, we started working out more. We started meditating.
And all of, like, this helped me as well.
Little by little.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like, when I went to we talked about this. I went to, like, the beginning of the pandemic. I was hugely depressed. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what was going on in the world.
Right.
I, you know, my phone that would ring 30 times a day with people wanting things or asking for things. Nothing. Or let's hang out because, you know, I want to go to your restaurant. Or I want to go to this party with you. Mm-hmm. Nobody called.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, where are all those people? Mm-hmm. And now I'm by myself. And who, you know, at the time when I was figuring out and struggling with my transitioning, I was like, who am I doing this for? There's no one calling.
Right.
Why am I changing myself for people that aren't really there? And when you're stuck with yourself, like you said, you really sit with yourself. And that's when I found Marsha.
Yeah.
And then when I found Marsha, I was like, oh, I'm going to take care of you.
Yes.
And I'm going to take care of that special part that I've been pressing down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I started the meditation and sitting with Marsha. Yeah. And that's when I started working out to have a place for Marsha to be and not have, like, you know, something so heavy or dark anymore, because I wanted to let her be free and let me be free, you know, as Marsha.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when, you know, like you said, I saw you transforming. I saw you working out. And I needed
I'm
thankful for the awareness, you know, even for you to find someone that can support you along that journey and teach you. Like you said, she actually taught me to meditate and to give you that love and light that you needed in those moments.
And it was unconditional without judgment. That's a really big deal.
Totally.
It's a really big deal. So it felt very, I'm happy for you, you know, and I have been watching.
Happy for us.
Yes. And, you know, that's how I would check in, you know, and see how you're doing. Because I felt like that once I started to also see I'm not the only one, then as well, how you said how people are not calling you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was a little bit of a couple of variety of things that were happening. My phone has never really rang that much because but when it did, it was like, oh, can I have something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you haven't even called me to ask me if I've had a glass of water today. Like,
or am I okay? You survived.
Are you okay? Yeah.
Right.
So I started to weed out anything that when this COVID finally opens back up.
Gotcha.
A lot of people, me 2.
Oh, okay. Can't get a hold of me.
That's exactly. So I felt like that. I just knew that. So in the beginning, I didn't see kind of how I'm feeling now.
Right.
In the beginning, it just felt really just, I mean, just a lot of different feelings. Losing friends, you know, like, oh my gosh, like, this is like weird not being able to like hug my friends.
Right.
That was driving me crazy. And I'm a over germaphobe.
Right.
So I was like afraid to even sit like over there.
Yeah,
and
you're
here.
Not
like,
coming
I was
over.
Like, and I was like, I love you, but I gotta be over here. Right. Like you will be over there. Like it was just such
and
a
And that's trauma anyway.
That is I felt so traumatized. I'm like, am I ever
And also
going
sometimes,
to see my friends again?
Am I the only
my
one?
Family? Am I the only one
feeling this way? Because I've had certain friends that were just wilding out.
Oh, a lot of them. This is why I actually was turning down TV shows during quarantine because some were filming and I was offered some stuff, but I was watching their Instagram and they were wearing no masks and then they would be like, oh, I got COVID. I don't know where I got it from.
You're like, girl.
I just saw you.
Right. Like, I'm not going that.
Like, I'm not doing that.
Right.
Yeah. So it was once I, you know, started to come to terms more with, okay, I'm not alone.
Right.
You know, I'm not alone. And I've always been a fighter. So I started to adapt this mentality called, what are you going to do about it?
Mm.
So what are you going to do about it, Samaya? Nothing
about it.
Are you going to sit and just completely fall apart?
Right.
That's not even like me.
Right.
Are you?
It hadn't happened then.
No. Like, why
so
now?
Why, yeah.
And for me, it was a total spiritual journey. So when I literally reached that, I remember my girl was like, damn, girl, it's about time.
Where have you been? Been
yeah,
waiting for
she's
you.
Like, I knew you had it in you, you know, and I think that when I mean, I say it all the time. I'm like, I'm not complaining. What am I going to do about it?
Right.
What am I going to do about it? So I started to really open up my eyes in a different way this time. You know, I started to, you know, okay, well, I'm not comfortable doing this, so I'm just not going to do it.
Right.
I'm not going to get depressed about it. I'm just, you know, I don't know, not show up to a place, whatever the case was.
Right. If it wasn't for you, you're not
If it wasn't
do
for
it.
Me, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
If I feel the slightest amount of low vibrational or negative energy from anyone.
Exactly. I'm out.
I'm out. And I'm not saying everyone's perfect because we all have things. It's called duality, you know?
Right.
Sometimes you sit in a dark space.
Right.
Sometimes you're in your light space. But we all know when someone's being negative and not in a good way. So I started to become much more aware in my energy, actually.
It's all about awareness.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot believe how much better I read energy now.
Right.
And how I went from I'm feeling down to no.
But once you get that awareness, I'll tell you, there's no going back.
Oh, there's no going back.
No
it
going
is the
back.
Wildest thing. It's like my intuition is at its highest. The energy I read, I don't let people trauma dump on me.
Mm.
And I'm here for you. But I cannot be everyone's sponge because I also, you know, whatever you're feeling, I'm going to feel because I'm a true empath.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there for people, but I can't be everything for everyone all the time.
Right.
And at one point, that's what I became, but nobody was there for me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The phone calls you get, like, gimme, gimme, gimme. But,
exactly.
But I need to talk,
right,
too. So once I started
to
identify that, even within my family, my circle went from, like, just like this to, like, a dot.
Right.
But I like my dot.
Right.
We're doing good.
We're good with the dot.
Yeah, we're good with the dot. And, you know, I feel that everyone that surrounds me is very true to themselves. And that's the biggest thing that I feel that I've always been. And some people, they come into their own. And once they get there, it's like, once you get there, you really know who you are. And you are just that person, like you said, when you're like, I'm gonna nurture Marsha. It's almost like I woke up and was like, it's go
here
time.
Here I am.
Mm-hmm. Here I am. It's go time. I am living in the most authentic self.
Yes.
That I have ever been at. I am authentically myself. I have always been, but I didn't truly exercise it until now.
I feel that.
This is who I am. And those that don't like it, it's okay. You don't have to be for everyone. It used to bother me.
Right.
Now I'm like, it's fine. And not in a negative way, but
I'm not for everyone.
Yeah, I'm not for everybody. Right. That's okay.
And, you know, even when people ask me, like, when are you going to find someone? I go, I don't know. I don't even think about that part.
That.
Because I'm so good here. Part. And I'm not for everyone.
No.
So I know that that special person might take some time. And right. I'm okay to wait for that.
And that's good.
Right.
That is great for you to
know. What are you going to do about it?
Exactly. Right. It's like, so what you going to do about it, Marsha?
Right.
You know? And that's a big thing for me. You know, I'm just in such a great place. I almost feel like it's weird to say this, but it's like I woke up just like, this is me. I am authentically myself. This is what I like. This is, if I'm not for you, it's okay.
And you're living for yourself.
Scroll past me. Right. Walk by me.
Right.
You know what I mean? But
I guarantee that you're going to reach more people being yourself and telling your truth, right?
I always have.
You know, and I think that's what's so special here. And I'm so grateful that, you know, you've shared your story with us here. And I know that it's going to reach people because it touches me and it gives me strength and know that there's always something to do about it. Yes. And I'm going to do something about it.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to stay in one place.
Yes.
And I'm going to see where my journey is going to lead me. I'm going to watch your journey and where it's going to lead you. Mm-hmm. And what you're already doing, you know, you've already, like, you have your tea line, you have your, and there's so much more for your future, mm-hmm. our future.
Yes.
And we're doing it and we're on that path. And let's say goodbye to the darkness. And girl, we're stepping into our light.
That is it.
And that's all we need
like,
to do.
Bye.
Bye.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you again for coming on, Marsha.
Thank you for sharing your story.
No, I mean, that's all we're here to do is to share our human experience and hopefully grow and learn from it. And I've definitely grown and learned from you today. Oh. And I love you so much.
I love you.
And thank you for sharing your light.
Always.
This podcast is brought to you by Vocal Podcast Network. Executive producers are Michaela Simon and Marsha Molinari. Produced by Yonta Taiwo, Morgan McDonald, and Ariana Giles. Shooting and editing by Morgan McDonald. Music by Aaron Rees. Artwork by Dominic Demetz. And hosted by Marsha Molinari. Remember to follow at Marsha Molinari and at Vocal Podcasts everywhere. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast.